All right, 6 o'clock, this whole meeting's in order. And, so I take a motion to accept the minutes.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes last month. In?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Very good. Well, we are doing here this evening by having been discussed.
Is her coming?
Yeah.
Well, I can go right ahead and I can update her for another time.
Okay.
If you wanted.
Well, you know, we'll
do the resolution. We're not going to take any action on 731.
Why is that? Was Tracy holding up?
Well, Tracy had, I guess originally when she was here, she was going to come back with some details.
Oh.
Some answers to the question, to some questions that they had. I haven't heard from her since. And so it's something that we're going to reach out to her first one to see what her intentions are. And hold on, better with the what she do with that. All right, well, since you're taking no action on that, we will go to resolution 336. That's approving execution of a contract. $1,000 to the Chief of County for the adequate program. Discussion?
Move it. I'll second. So, yeah, is this going out to bid, or do we already have an agency that's going to handle this? It says advocacy services to youth receiving services through the county's coordinated children's services program.
I don't see any indication that it's going out to bid. I think it's just an existing contract.
It's professional services negotiated.
Yeah. So
35% county money.
Yeah. So it's you fund for charity.
What's the parent there?
Six?
Seven.
No, it's an agreement that's already been established.
So I expect you to have it. Parent not just for pins.
Yeah, so these advocates and parent advocates.
So these are state mandated programs?
They're mandated. Yeah.
So the state picks up 65 and pick up 35. Persons in need of supervision.
Better than nothing.
Yeah. We don't have much of a choice. Any further discussion?
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't clear as to who's doing the work. So they don't think they're hooked. I mean, is it Children's Coordinated Services that's doing it? No, because it's a contract.
I think it's more of a situation where there's not a deep pool of people, of companies to choose from.
Yeah,
it's my understanding that similarly with for the family advocate.
Right, yeah, it's just
like that same contract.
So DSS is going to contract out to do this. Professional services negotiated.
So the explanation of requisite paperwork that's required out of her to manage individual cases.
Are there in the resolution does it say who's going to do the
required paperwork?
It's on the first page.
Hold on.
In the center left corner of that box.
Or you need the magnifying glass to
read it. Well,
if they're the ones who are on the reading page, they're probably not the ones.
Yeah, right.
They have their own budget. Why do we need to give 33% of state requirements to them when we already fund them?
I'll ask 10 for now.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a program
within
the state
mandate. It's a state mandate, so the state
gets it. It's trying to give us 65%
or something. Is that what they do?
I mean, it doesn't sound.
We have a bloated DSS staff building. We've got many social workers, many case workers, and we're going to do six children, programs to a minimum of 6 youth at any one time during the term of this agreement. We're paying more for someone else to do the job that we could be doing. I'm going to ask. Hold up. I'll put it in the poll tomorrow.
So you're saying that if it's a third party one, it should be in-house to make this happen?
Yeah, I mean, so far we didn't privatize social services.
Right. I mean, if you were to ask the county executive's office what, they would probably say it's a specialized service that individual employees don't have the requisite training,
right,
and that there's a retention and turnover factor involved where employees that are hired by the county in private practice and private industry, they would make more money, so they end up, people that are have those types of requirements end up leaving county jobs, and then it costs more money to retrain them, that there's a retraining factor involved.
Can we do another?
That's the answer I'm always giving when I ask questions along those lines.
For the resources in order to
about in-house privatization, that's the answer.
This county has facilitated the TIMS program, they've facilitated the MINS program, minors in need of supervision.
Yeah.
They do children's coordinated services, they do all kinds of things. I just want to know who's doing the work, that's all.
In CFRA, I see number 11, it says something about Harrisburg.
From Support Center in Harrisburg, supplied the service of program monitoring.
Maybe the facility or
Well, see, is this a contract? Because if it's a contract, there's usually a place where people sign.
It is a contract. Well, you only have partial
contract. It is a contract on Schedule A. It's just that if you want to look at
this. Craig has the entire one. You just have the Schedule A, B, and C. So that's all the meat to it.
I just want to see where the signatures go. There's one.
What does it say? It says the what?
Yeah, there's
the firm.
The firm.
And the program.
Schedule B.
That's why they don't
invoice the county department for social services. You can ask the name of the company, the firm.
That's a Tribune for a company.
You shouldn't be ambiguous about there's going to be a contract, even if we only have to, if we're only paying 33%
of
$86,000, or 34%, we should know, I mean, unless the firms haven't been hired yet, and we're just allocating,
the money. See, here's the thing, Carl, is that there's a set amount of money. It doesn't appear to be something that goes out for an RFP bid. So it's a type of thing where, okay, this is what's going to be paid out to do this program, and 65% gets reimbursed by the state. So when they say the firm, like what Nettie said, that's a template. Okay. However, for the fact that it says it's in Harrisburg, I don't understand this.
Right, but
Harrisburg
I think
main
the
facility.
Part of the point is that it's a lot of ambiguity as to who the firm is. And
yeah.
Right.
Glossed over with us.
Sure.
Well, I mean, I guess we could
We could pass it, but we request that Ken can...
We're only speculating on what this is.
I'm saying it's gonna have to get... It'll have to get passed anyway for state mandate, but we could request that Ken Cornell come here and explain to us, you know, that maybe could give us a list of all the benefits of the company.
Yeah, I'm surprised he's not here.
Yeah.
Well, they're on vacation this week, a lot of them.
Okay.
The actual firm is Youth Advocate Program Incorporated. Because if you Google Youth Advocate Programs Incorporated, it's based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Right, okay.
So that's who.
Here's the BSS
Youth Advocate Program.
So that's usually where you'll see
it. That's very generic, but...
The footnote's smaller print even.
Oh, that's good, John.
But even if that, to speak to your point, is this something that needs to be contracted out and not done within the parameters of the process?
Well, probably what they're going to say is, okay, so Youth Advocate Services has, you know, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania is, you know, 4 hours from here, maybe 4.5 hours from Kingston, so... obviously, this is a specialized facility,
what the county executive's office would argue is that we don't have the resources. That's right. Why these things are privatized.
We do that on a number of programs.
I'm just saying, when I've had questions regarding, you know, the processing, why do we have a middleman to choose our and administer our healthcare policy? Why can't it be done in-house?
Well, because of HIMSS is a basic function of the Department of Social Services, okay? And it should be handled by Ulster County people, because these are our Ulster County unions. And if they're, I don't believe that a company in Pennsylvania, if they're sitting at their desk administering this program, there's got to be people that are going to come to Ulster County and sit with these kids, because it says they have to be...
You're going
to
be the program manager,
yeah.
I'll
find out. I think it's based on the premise that they do a cost-benefit analysis.
Because this can't be that specialized. Because Dulce County's been doing it for many years. And my question is, do we still have a coordinated children's services department?
Mm-hmm.
We do?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to find out, so.
So, anyway, I don't know. Do we figure anything out?
Because why do we employ so many case workers and social workers, and then we're contracting out, which I don't know if we're contracting out, I guess we won't.
No, I don't know if I would agree with the bloated and too many social workers. As a county, we rely very strongly on non-profit.
Well, there's more case workers than more social workers, definitely.
I happen to know a constituent, I was going to speak on that point that you made before. One of my constituents has the worst possible, most virulent form of multiple sclerosis, and she's bedridden and has been for, you know, several decades. And they have different caseworkers and care aides that come over to her apartment, and I was over one day when the Ulster County social service worker was over, and they were actually complaining that there had been a lot of cuts made and that there were positions that were phased out due to attrition when people retired, and they weren't any people hired to replace these people that retired through attrition. So they said that the caseloads they had were tremendous, that they were running around ragged trying to, service all their clients that they had on their caseloads. So, you know, that's one area of social services, but the feedback that I get from people in social services is that, you know, since there have been the cuts made, that they're working very hard and have difficulty meeting the caseload with these positions that have been phased out through retirement.
I don't believe there's been any cut in the budget for social services. It rises and rises. More than three quarters of our
$301 million budget for 340.
We just had a similar budget exam for a caseworker in some fashion.
Right. You know. I'm not going to speculate. I'm asking questions, and we don't have a reference to answer them, but I'll call tomorrow. That's all. And I'll let you guys know. I'll email. Because I'd just like to know, are we for contract with an agency? Why can't we do it in-house?
I'm of the belief that if we can do it in-house, it's better because you have more direct oversight over it, and the buck stops here with the county if it's done in-house with county employees. But there's all types of issues that liability issues too, and it's subcontracted hours.
I think it is an interesting question to ask. Why? Because if you look at the scope of services, we're pretty much just hiring this company to oversee. The advocate positions they're hiring are local people that they're hiring. No. So why can't DSS oversee the hiring?
Right.
I think it's great that they're hiring local advocates,
sure.
But they're not shipping them in from Pennsylvania.
Right.
Why is it that we need a company in Pennsylvania to do the hiring practice locally? Is it really that? I think it is a simple question.
Yeah, I think that is a good question. And speak to what Chris said a little bit. It's pure speculation that it may be not being able to actually provide for what they need.
So $86,000, so 35% of that is what we're responsible for. So, we're looking at, like low 50s of what our burden is, so
right.
It might be.
I don't think the amount is the question. I think the process in which this contract is going about.
Right. I'm saying, like, from a fiscal responsible point of view, let's say they would have to hire one additional employee. Okay, so when you add the employee's salary plus the health care benefits being provided to the employee, it's going to be more than $54,000. So that's why it's subcontracted out.
Yeah.
Well, I think the question was though, is whether we could hire, whether someone who's already within our system could, because also the question I would have too is with the number of 86,000, because we're a maximum of three, a minimum of six. So how many people are we hiring? And so how much of this 86,000 is going to this company in Pennsylvania versus how much actually gets, what are these people, are they getting,
sure.
What are we hiring is local, you got to get, are they getting paid through the DSS budget to get that through the separate, or is it coming out of the 86,000?
$29,240, 34%. I bet you that's all administrative costs, because, again, I believe that we do the pins, the DSS is in charge of the pins and it's in charge of the bins.
I think a broader question on that would be to ask, if you want to find out specifically these people that are doing the oversight and supervision, is there a certain level of certification that they're required to have? And then, if a social service worker has a certain level of certification, then obviously they command a higher salary. So that would, explain, to have an extra person on staff with that level of certification, we have to pay this amount of money for the private.
Yeah, and I agree with that, but really that's it. We're just speculating.
Right. Well, they need to obviously be much more
specific. Right, and I think that Tori, you want to reach out to this?
Yes.
Are we going to do it as
request that he come for the next meeting and then we have questions for him?
I'm shocked that he's not here.
Okay.
He was here when Michael Burt was here, but he had to leave the room because we're into executive session.
Anyway, anything else? We'll ask Ken. My question, and then so is everybody okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
any small question?
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Alrighty. Now, we will go. code, shoot. Gotta worry. Nice to be back. That one.
Well, as talking with her, and he suggested that I just update reports on what we've been doing days and all the times that I've been kind of dance down and what's been going on this year. Although we certainly have a really long distance to go. Basically, our purpose still remains that in the future we're going to continue our efforts in all the areas that are mentioned on this list. There's a long list of 22, 23 items that have grown since last year. And I also want to thank the Super Ontario Legislature also for recognizing the Memorializing Resolution for Dyslexia Awareness Month. Assemblywoman Joanne Simon of New York and also Senator Martin, and they got one day. And I'm just, you know, every time I speak to other people in other states or other localities, you know, they say, well, you got a whole month. You know, so in this year we're hoping to launch other types of initiatives. So our goal is also to promote awareness, tell our stories, and support parents and families. Educate the New York State legislators, because we're finding that after being in Washington for a week and also other efforts down there, although I personally had a lot of really big inroads and help, we're finding that it's really the state and the localities that it's really, this is where it's really going to happen. It's not going to happen from, although we did get some new legislation that says we do have to recognize dyslexia and that we can use that terminology in the public school. We want to continue to celebrate the strength of dyslexia and a positive impact on individuals and their contribution to society. And also we're expecting a turnaround in the public school education system. As presented last year, you know, two-thirds of students who don't read proficiently by the fourth grade will end up incarcerated or on welfare, and that's unacceptable. And that's not even just the kids that are from the middle-class families who have dyslexic kids that can't afford these expensive private schools, and their kids need help. We have the absolute proof that the structures in the dyslexic brain are unique, and they're not similar to the standard brain, and we need other interventions, which we know has been trying to prove for over 100 years, and now we have the scientific proof that, you know, we can do it, and it can happen. So much has happened. There's the library initiative. There's the October was Dyslexia Awareness Month in 2016. Herb was talking about coming to talk to my students. I've had a 16-year program about engineering and the kinds of things, because that inspires them to believe that they can go somewhere. I have a student who's in a gang, is reading now, and now is out, not in jail. I have another student who's getting his PhD next year in physical therapy, very rigorous medical terminology. And when you have the correct approach, it changes lives. And also, with these Title I programs, also these kind of interfaces, I've been working with some Title I people a little bit too, because we've got to really address this. We have the library initiative. There was group tutoring for dyslexics in the public library. We're looking to expand that. We're hoping that Bill A4330 and S5439 in New York State for early identification and early teacher training you know, will come to fruition. It's been pending for 2 years already, and it's also been in the mix since 2007. And so in Albany, they were saying, well, have you looked at, you know, higher education? And yes, we need to look at higher education. There's so much that happened. There's, you know, the first Dyslexia Awareness at Capitol Hill, our group went to. We're also partnering with Dyslexia Parent Advocacy, huge group, all United States with four provinces. Also, I was able to meet with Senator Jill Graham's staff, Schumer's staff, Chris Simpson, and some other people, and then also I was able to personally talk to the head of the Dyslexia Caucus, Lamar Smith, and it has $7.5 million for research, $2.5 million have to go to certain kinds of research, and they like this idea, which I have been researching and trying to push through New York State up. It's called Rainbow Research. So, like, getting that down, and also we met with the Department of Education, and they've asked us to come back in August, and then also asked us to apply to look at this new reading center that they're trying to do. So we also have this documentary film project, and also Herb is also involved in that, or Stephen Polk, who is the director-producer, has pulled him in anyway. And also, they're really keeping track of what's happening state to state, and then also telling the story of New York State is one of the focuses. Right now, they're working on California, and they're really trying to tell the family stories about, you know, the struggle that families have had trying to get their kids help when they know that they're average or above average intelligence, but these reading programs have not hit it on the head of the nail, and they're just, it really needs to be improved through the teacher education. Also, there's the national, and there's so much we were involved with the National Learning Disabilities Association, International Dyslexia Association, and they asked to interview me, so I went to Baltimore to be interviewed for that. And I also, I mentioned you guys, mentioned Ulster County, you know, that we're really, you know, we've got a whole month, and yeah, there's a lot of shout-out, and people are, you know, starting to really look at, you know, how we did this, and also here at this legislative level, and then also, you know, locally in Highland, and, you know, they wanted to do a you know, documentary about that, so to help other school districts, help other states, localities, and that kind of thing. So there's so much here. There's also, you know, a blog that started, the Pediatric Association asked me to come, so there's so much going on. So I'm hoping that, you know, really that, you know, we'll grant another, you know, just like the Awareness Month, and that we can try to pull in, and maybe the, you know, the Pediatric Association will sponsor something, and then, you know, we can have a fuller event, that kind of thing.
What month was that?
October.
October. Mm-hmm. Couple of months from now.
So with some of the more rural counties in New York State, how easy is it for you to spread your message in counties where it's more isolated than Ulster County?
Right now what we're doing is we're partnering with Decoding Dyslexia, which is the powerhouse of parent advocates who are really upset about their kids. And I'm personally trying to channel that upset energy, you know, into something positive. And there are people, we don't have a map yet of where all these people are existing, but they're starting to pop up all over the place. So that's a very good question about the rural, because the city of New York is really, they already had a hearing in May, and they're really trying to rock this thing and really address the educational piece through in-service as well as trained in like places like Kildonan Teacher Training Institute, and which is private but associated with a private school that's done this for many, many years, and then also getting the curriculum changes at the university level.
So with like,
and they're really, there's a few of them down there that we'll be meeting with during the next couple of weeks that are really pushing very hard to get funding also for these college programs in the city system and the community system.
That'll get outreach throughout the state.
That will get out, yeah. So in terms of, that's also really important, and that's also kind of my heart, because Highland, years ago, used to be considered an Appalachian region. And I also, okay, sorry.
Well, it's just part of the Appalachian Trail.
You know,
technically it is.
Okay.
I believe so, yeah.
And I also worked in the northernmost region in Tompkins County of the Appalachian region in New York State. So I'm very familiar with that population. And interestingly enough, years ago, they had a doctor recruiting program maybe 40 years ago, where they were recruit doctors, give them a free education, and a personal friend of mine was educated down in Princeton, and he moved to Highland, and then, you know, they provided that service, and I was thinking, why don't we have a teacher corps? And I made that suggestion to the federal people and senators and people that were down there, and congressmen and their aides, because it's really an important thing to get to the rural population. So
like with the county, like say Columbia County has a, they don't have a county legislature, they have a, like a association of town supervisors. So
for the
county
supervisors,
if there are counties or counties like that, what is like the
strategy? We don't have anything in place.
Okay.
You know, in terms of something that's active, but that also could be added as a goal.
So you expect like monthly or meetings or twice a month.
And it would take finding out what the board, what did you call it, a board of
supervisors.
Okay, board of supervisors, and then you also have your county legislatures. So what we really need to be doing is also looking at the list of what those are and then canvassing that either personally and or by letters. Personally is much better. I do know that there's one other individual, and it's starting to happen through the people, because I'm trying to access a lot of people quickly, and I've been doing that through Dicone Dyslexia, and there's already two people that are coming forward that, you know, want the speech, want the information, and also, you know, I collaborated with people in Minnesota to do this. Minnesota, you know, and so... You know, my information is going to them and supporting their process, and then you're supporting us. So, you know, we're in the very beginning stages, you know, the incubator stages really of moving forward. But it is really important that the legislators understand, you know, the pain that these families are going through, and that we have the answer. So, you know, and that's, you know, north, south, east, west, you know.
Now, did we, as a committee, send a letter, or was it just addressed?
We did a memorializing for the state,
right.
for the state legislation, and we designated October as the Dyslexia Awareness Month.
That would it be helpful for you if we, as a committee, wrote a letter?
That'd be amazing. Yeah, that'd be great.
And I would leave it up to that.
The Association of Counties is looking for resolutions for their September meeting, and I'm on the Health and Mental Health Committee.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can talk with you and get the groundwork for a resolution, I could bring it up there. This will be my first meeting ever, but they've asked me for, you know, resolutions to discuss at the September meeting.
The
legislature and the assembly is on the leave right now, I believe.
January.
Right.
And also, I say, too, that this really does impact the social emotional aspect. And, you know, certainly with our, you know, incarceration and also, because there's a huge number of dyslexics there, and the illiteracy rate is very high. And then also...
Right, a resolution from if it got passed, would be sent to all the counties in New York State. Because all the counties are members of NYSAC, and they would have the opportunity to sponsor their own resolutions also.
Okay, that would be great, and then I could tell that if you're running dyslexia, moms and dads, too.
And this is something that I would encourage individual legislators to bring to their towns.
Yes,
absolutely. And if you can get the towns on board as well, it's a collective effort, you know, with the same poll. That could be helpful.
And that'll be where the legislatures, you know, and hit the road at the same time that the parents are, because that's really where it is, and then whatever the gap in between is. And that was the Association of Mental Health, Association of...
New York State Association of Counties.
Association of Counties.
No, I think that would be wonderful. And then saying that, you know, you can promote or, and, you know, also supporting, you know, whether it's A4320 and 54, you know, 39, I don't know that the legislatures, the county legislatures can support those kinds of state things, but certainly you could express some kind of, that you're aware that, you know, over an important
issue. Sure. Now, the memorialized resolution last year that was in support of pending legislation or...
That was to
put
awareness and acknowledgement of
cancer.
If you want to call it a condition, it's really a unique brain structure.
That's
something
that's
standard.
That we could do as well. Yeah.
Number 10 on your list.
Yeah, to put our support behind
this
legislation.
And also, it's... Senator Morton Golden and then Assemblywoman Joanne Simon, plus there are a lot of other assembly persons and senators that are getting on board with that.
What's an Alkin teacher training?
Yeah.
We were in a meeting with Kathleen Nolan, who dispenses funds, I believe. Anyway, we were meeting with Mr. Poland, one of her aides or staffers, who was an analyst. And there's a gentleman at the meeting, Kevin Pendergast, he said you could do it for $3,000, you know, so...
For school district?
It would be probably per person per district. I'm not sure. If it was $3,000 per district, and if you have 100, if you have 1,000 children, you know, 20% of them are going to be having that difficulty. So, you know, you can, and it's usually served through special education services to guarantee that it occurs. You have your AIS and ISD, meaning that you have your academic intervention services, and if those, it's really a failure model. If the kids fail, all these other interventions, then finally they get to my classroom. And that way you waste about two to four years, pushing to get it. And that's why we're saying we want to have this screening very early into the first grade, or at least the question in all school districts on the kindergarten screening when they come in, you know, is there a history of dyslexia? Is there a history of reading problems or math problems? Simple question. You know, to be flagged, but certainly...
Spending the tens of thousands of dollars on children that don't need the programs they're putting them in.
Mm-hmm. Or they need to be
screened. Because if they screen them and find out they're dyslexic, they can utilize a different approach to teaching them, which is much cheaper than putting them through a remedial reading or mental health program.
Yeah.
It's just that they're not diagnosing or, I don't even want to use the word diagnosing.
Yeah.
They're not screening
right. The
children to find out who's the 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, you probably save taxpayer money.
Right.
Yeah.
Screen them first.
Exactly.
So with, do you know her? Do you know with the New York State Senator Johnson, right, with Assembly 4330 and Senate 5439, if that would make it like a funded state mandate or unfunded state mandate? But
that's
the financial
decision. I don't know what the legislation says.
Yeah. No, I'm just curious. Like, would they, because here's a situation where making government adding an extra layer.
Right.
Like what Legislator Litz was saying, adding an extra layer of assessment in the school systems will actually save taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when you're adding something to government, from a fiscal conservative point of view, you're actually making government more efficient and more cost effective and you're saving the taxpayers money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm actually really kind of surprised that this type of screening already
especially in New York State.
To me, dyslexia is something, you know, that my uncle suffered from dyslexia. He was lucky to have a teacher and he went through special, you know, correction. And,
right.
But this was like in the 60s. So mm-hmm. to me, it's just been kind of a yeah, very shock right now that we're not right going.
We're still on the Stone Age.
It's really surprising. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you.
I think it's in part because it's still viewed as a disability. When,
yeah.
when in reality, it's just another way people learn.
Exactly.
And I think what that's right.
That's
right.
The awareness part. Yeah. That's where we got to go.
Sure.
And I think in the 1970s when they had, it was an IDA, it was a public law, 194, 194, I think it was, that was basically the trade-off, call it a disability so we get our kids help. Because
sure.
otherwise nothing's going to happen. And there's not going to be no accountability. But then there wasn't, the research did not inform, hasn't informed the instruction and the screening practices. Now, I mean, we're not going to go there, but, you know, they say that they can now identify kids at birth. I think it would be really expensive and all that other kind of stuff and unnecessary because really you're talking about academics. But, you know, what we're looking at in the school system is academic progress and growth and proficiencies, you know, so they can sustain themselves through any kind of a work situation that they need to be in. And it is really a travesty. My parents and students are so lucky. It's life changing. It just is. And you know, I'm just really glad to be part of it. I'm glad they're listening to me. So, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think from a committee standpoint, we will write a letter.
Please, thank you.
And then everybody will be on board.
And that letter will go to, so I can report back to my families and decoding just left the appearance, and I could just tell them that you're writing a letter, and the letter is going to be going to other legislatures. Did I hear that correctly?
It should go to the Assembly and the Senate.
As a committee, a letter of support, I think,
okay.
with us as individuals.
And Carl can carry that with him when you go to your meeting.
Yeah.
This is what we're doing in those times.
I want to have a resolution
prepared. Okay.
Would it also be, should we also address it to the Chancellor of SUNY and the Department of, and the right. Commissioner of the Department
yeah.
of Earth?
I think yeah, that's good idea.
Yeah.
We can do that. And then,
New York State Board of Regents, which is part of
that. Yeah.
I think as individuals, you know, this is something that we can take back to our towns. And if you want to,
right.
if you want to add that, that was a suggestion that
mm-hmm.
we could, as legislators, bring it to our towns.
And then that
legislation is part of the board.
Yeah, that's great. Really.
Is it more effective going to a town board as well, more so than a school board?
Because
a lot of us actually share, like I know I share a school district with multiple mm-hmm. legislators. We have a lot of central schools, like mm-hmm. Iowa, sure. and Ontario School District.
Yeah. Well, if you need any information, I'd be glad to help support that. And I know that I've been asked for Highland, there's one person on our board that asked to do a presentation, just haven't gotten it yet.
Very good.
So, okay. So is it okay if I go back to my...
Sure.
People were saying that this is wonderful. Okay. Chancellor of the State, if I hear you right, Chancellor of the State of New York Board of Regents, and then there was one other that I knew.
Education Commissioner.
We've got a website for all that information where you can find it, like a long website with contact information for all three.
Are you asking me?
No, I'm saying there is.
There is, okay.
Yeah, yeah, because I've been on it before.
Okay, great. All right. It's already charged, right?
Pretty comprehensive. Yeah, you can
yeah.
find it with like a Google search, like, okay. that comes up and so on.
Great, thank you.
And then that list, we've got lists of the counties, like which ones have the board of supervisors as opposed to the county legislators, and that would be a way that you can... Like if you had a nice organized template of which counties have legislatures, which counties have the board of supervisors. and then you make presentation to the Board of Supervisors of Yackel County.
Right.
Like Columbia County is a local one that doesn't have a legislature.
Would this committee also be willing to recommend to the chairman that October be...
Yeah, I think that's... And you met us October last year.
Yeah.
I don't... October is the critical Waukena Awareness Month as well, so I don't know how that works because we have a number of quotas in only 12 months, so I'm...
Yeah, there's...
You can piggyback on a month.
Yeah. Or if you just make a recommendation to the chairman because he wants suggestions...
Yeah.
And so if it's not October now,
And
I believe the national awareness month for dyslexia is October as well.
That's a good month if you think about it, because it's the first month of the year where they're having a full month of classes for the school year in New York State.
Is there anything that I should be asking about that I haven't, or anything you... Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. So are you going to be looking at... The Memorial Lake and Resolution Project that's already went up to the state, but that was for last year. And to the assembly and...
Probably check and see what these two bills are.
I don't think we had a memorializing resolution last year in support of defending legislation, right?
So
this will be in support of the legislation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then a copy of that will get transmitted to all the folks that we
want to figure out the status, pending status.
So we also really thank you, October supported as Dyslexia Awareness Month as well, so that we can, plan some things.
Sure.
And
that's something we can ask.
Make sure to pass both resolutions together. It makes sense to pass both resolutions together.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it would.
Okay.
And then we have October set for White Cane.
Mm-hmm. What's White Cane?
Blind people.
Oh, blind people? You know, they're making red.
Red can mean something. Not White Cane.
Now, is she actually going to have a presentation? We did that, 3 years ago.
So is it possible to have that and then
all of your memorializing resolutions and stuff like that? I think that the chair said is fine, but I don't think we have a lot for October session. Maybe September or.
Just see you guys Okay, thank you all very much. And how shall we work on that?
I don't have any of my cards.
Okay.
But you can contact.
I have
information
on the issue.
Okay. Yeah. Okay,
good.
Yeah.
So let's work
as soon as. Oh, yes, because I have to submit it well before September.
Okay, great.
The conference is the 17th of the
19th. And so what kind of information do you need?
Well, I guess an explanation of what it is, where you've been.
I won't take any more of this one.
Let's get my with that.
Sure.
Here
you go.
Well, thank you. Here's the card right here. And you can take yourself.
Give her my cell phone number too. 594-4292.
Oh.
You're cold.
Yeah, I'm Italian. That's a sense of direction.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
good night.
All right.
Okay.
See you all tomorrow.
Over there. Are you going to be at the fair? Can you stick around? Prepare to adjourn. Prepare to move.
All right.
See you.
Bye. 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 Bye.
to do business. And then everybody have a chance to look at the letter. That's the one coming from the John
I'm on the government efficiency and review committee, so we got this letter 2 months ago from our carrier. And I agree with him. In the second to last paragraph, he says that we would recommend sending this resolution and reconsider what qualifies as housing option, because he looked at all the vending machines in the county and he's called the vendor and they found out that a peanut granola bar has more saturated fat than a bag of Doritos. So technically, the bag of Doritos is a healthy food item and the peanut granola bar isn't. And I think that, I'm sure this resolution was well intended when it was presented to the legislature 5 years ago.
So was Mayor Bloomberg's our salt intake and our soda counterparts and peanuts and stuff.
I mean, to me, I would think like a healthy option would be like an apple or a piece of cheese, although I don't know how much saturated fat is in a piece of cheese. Probably not a lot of saturated fat, but definitely fat.
I just think it's an overreach on the guy.
A salad, you know, vending machine with a salad or something.
Yeah, and that's fine. I just don't think that we have any clerks suggesting what people
right.
need. You know, they can make that decision.
I mean, because it seems to me that if we had a nutritionist actually look at all the items in there, we would find that we weren't conforming to the resolution and the policy.
I believe the attention was, I mean, the data shows, you know, the amount we spend in healthcare in terms of that we've prevented with better dietary options and choices, but, I mean, just doesn't seem like this policy is effective even in that intention.
Right.
Because if it's like, if you look at what, like, you know, what Carl outlined, what's outlined here in terms of the fact that diet sodas counting as a healthy option versus Monster energy drinks. I understand the intent. We should decide whether we want to relook at the actual policy or if it's just because it just doesn't seem like the intent is being fulfilled at all.
Right. It wasn't fulfilled. I don't necessarily agree with that, although it's a good intent, but I just don't think that's something within the scope of what we should be doing as all the members. So I'm not for it in its entirety, but if anybody else thinks that it should be tweaked in order.
Well, I mean, it's only it's only ones that we come check for when building. It's not like you're telling other five or ten.
Right. Yeah, I understand that.
You know what's ironic I see about this is legislator John Parody put forward this. His son Robert Parody was the one that wrote this resolution like 5 years and 2 months ago.
Yeah, 2001.
The irony of that.
Yeah.
It was a different legislature back
then. I see that. Walter Fry, my celebrity chief, was the chairman of that committee back then.
Well, it's funny because we didn't make a recommendation.
Have we saturated
the committee? Didn't make a recommendation yet for whether we should rescind it, because that's the charge of the committee. Right. We meet, we're not meeting in August.
Okay.
When we meet in September, I guess we'll figure that out. Maybe it can be tweaked.
Well, I think in this letter, he's asking for
I was trying to steer it too, because I know, you know, there are, and we have them in the state, in some of the state buildings up in Albany, there's actual vendors that specialize in this type of having more healthy options and vending machines. Because I don't know, How many years ago was this?
2011.
So in that time, this was something, and those options might not have been available as much, but until the actual vendors were choosing, I mean, it just seems like there might be ways to be more effective and fiscally more effective as well.
Like you need a refrigerated unit versus...
No, I mean, there's one for specialized. They just, you know, instead of, you know, they do, instead of regular potato chips, they do, like, banana chips, apple, yeah, bacon, you know, it's like a more of a formulaic way of stocking a vending machine with better options than tasking someone to follow, like, a... It also is a more broad, or a specific policy for a specific county building. You know, one that's just a team, like, you know, the guy who's not doing this to the majority of his clients, I bet he's just fine speaking it for all facilities.
That was true. The one point I see in here, the original resolution 128, and it says towards the bottom, two-thirds down the bottom, on page 2, snack foods shall meet all of the following criteria per individual package, not more than 250 calories. And I'm almost thinking, like, some people, you know, like, if you're on the go, and let's say, like, you don't have the opportunity that specific time to eat, like, you know, to go to a restaurant and get a meal, or, you know, to have, a bag lunch that you brought with you, you know, you're actually looking for the snack food to, like, be your meal. So for it to limit the calorie intake number, it seems to be that it's restrictive in that regard. Because, and it could be the quality of calories, too. Like, what Peter Hefner's saying, like, something like veggie chips, or along those lines, instead of potato chips, it could be, like, that's what I was asking Carl. How many calories are in that?
Oh, yeah, 130.
Oh, all right, well, that would make it. But, I mean, yeah, like, on a 2,000-calorie meal, you know, you're looking to get about, you know, 700 calories each meal. So, obviously, you have to buy, like, you know, 3 bags of chips or something and a juice, or 2 bags of chips and a juice to get your 700 calories and measure meal, you know.
It also says that they shouldn't contain trans fat, hydrogenated oils, and this has safflower oil and sunflower oil.
Which is good. Yeah, but I don't know, are they hydrogenated or non-hydrogenated? They're probably not, because if you look in this, does it have polysaturated or saturated fat?
Saturated fat, 20 grams.
Or it's polysaturated.
I guess there is no
saturated.
You look at it. We're not compliant with our own policy, and it's not the purchasing director's fault.
So our purchasing director having to spend the time not giving all 50 vending machines.
He did. That's what he said.
So for for this bag of veggie chips, it's 0.5 grams of saturated fat, and there's 7 total grams of fat. So if this were in there, this would be a good item to have, because 6.5 grams of the fat. So actually, Carl, those are very good forms of oil, because they're 85% poly and not saturated. So the sunflower oil and safflower oil, they're 85% polysaturated.
Oh, I
don't know. So if it was saturated fats, or animal fats, or when you cook eggs, you know, when it solidifies, so that's a saturated fat, or meats, fat that comes off of meat, and then a poly or monosaturated fat, that's something that would be coconut oil, or like almond oil, or safflower oil, or sunflower oil, or olive oil. You know, those would be the types of sources of a mono or polysaturated fat. And that those are the ones that don't, and the difference is that they don't solidify at room temperature. So if you take, you know, and you cook bacon or a hamburger, and then you let the pan sit, and it solidifies, so then when you eat that, that's what happens inside your arteries and in your
food. I think the main intention, and I'm not going to just speak for the legislators at the time, or Legislative Perry or Rob Perry when he introduced this, but it's just to give the majority of those who use vending machines in county buildings are going to be county employees, to give our employees a healthy option. It is only 50% of what's in. So right. they can still get a Snickers bar.
And
just that if we're going to do this, let's make it effective and actually give them a healthy option and not let that healthy option be categorized as Diet Coke and Doritos. You know, so if we do, you know, we can relook at this. But I think at the end of the day, I'm not a nutritionist, but it's just to give, it's a really a human resources thing where we're just trying to give, as part of a greater initiative from the executive's office, but give our employees some options.
I'll leave it up to the vendors. If the market's demanding healthier food, then they'll see the difference. If people stop buying the garbage, they're going to realize it and know that they have to make a change.
And people like food like that.
Like
idiotic. And they can still get it.
Revenue was down the past 3 years. Now it's at 6,800, and it was at 17,500. Now it's
But see, back in 2011, Santa Fe wasn't open, right?
Well, Santa
Fe is rather Christian. You can't be an oasis for, healthy eating. You got to make your own choice. You're out in the world there, and 90% of the food is crap out there. And you got to really, really work hard to find healthy food and pay a lot of money.
I don't live in a rent-freezing state.
Right.
A lot of people
make it. Well, my wife and I, for a year now, we've been eating mostly organic foods.
Wow.
And it's expensive.
Do you feel a difference?
No, I don't really feel a difference.
Oh, I do.
You know, like a pound of butter is like, $6.50
Wow.
Yeah, go up to Mother Earth. But it's good. It's good for you.
We have...
I'm looking better, I applaud Dr. Smith for getting this information to us. How many applicants were denied a license? Zero. But I was in New Paltz at a store getting gas, and I had to get a receipt. And someone walked in asking, and they had cigarettes on the back of the counter, asking for whatever pack they wanted, and the owner said that he couldn't because he didn't have a license, or his license expired, or he didn't renew his license or something. Even though the cigarettes were lined up in the thing. So I thought that was interesting.
Yes, sir.
So maybe he wasn't denied a license. Maybe he forgot to renew it.
I just don't think the resolution from 2015 is here. I was going to give them. Was there a fee associated? I'm assuming there's a fee.
I don't think he said that would come later, but initially there wasn't going to be.
Okay, I'm curious. I was curious if anything like revenue.
No.
Well, because the key statistic here to me is where it says the 22 licenses were granted within 1,000 feet of the school. So those are all grandfather licenses where that would either be a reapplication of pre-existing businesses, or it would be a case where a business was sold and the new business was granted the opportunity to get the application to apply for as a grandfather or continuation of the old licensure ability to sell cigarettes within 1,000 feet. So the new law was not allowing any new businesses to spring up within 1,000 feet of school.
And eventually we'll start charging a licensing fee?
They said maybe.
I think originally that was potentially there.
I was going to say down the way.
I think as of now there is.
Right.
That was part of how more people got on.
They didn't want to make too many waves at first with it.
On board is because at first it was kind of ambiguous as to.
So there was a lot of wrangling that went back and forth with the language in this, and there was some. Counselor Daring took exception to some of the language in there, and there was. debate that went back and forth at the time. You know, this wasn't something that just passed through in like one or two meetings.
No, because the original open law only required establishments that were in 1,000 feet of a school. And I argued that everyone should be, if you're going to license this, everyone should be licensed the same way. You shouldn't pick on an establishment because it's close to the school. Now I know I have one that's very close to the school, Post County BOCES, that's Dan Lund's. They sell cigarettes. They're right next to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, and they said the same thing. As long as it applies to everybody, because in the beginning, I think the thrust of this local law was only targeting establishments that sold cigarettes within the family.
Well, that was the purpose. It was because they didn't want kids that were walking by the campus of their school to see the advertising signs or to see, you know, like the lights in the window.
They can advertise to the Hilt outside if they want.
But they don't want exposure. It's reducing exposure to youth. That was the intent of the law, was to reduce exposure to youth.
Right.
Right, so like if a student's walking by and they can visually either see the tobacco products through like a window where you have some sort of like line of sight into the business, or, you know, you can see either the tobacco products themselves behind the counter, or you can see some kind of advertising sign, they wanted to minimize that as much as possible.
They can't do anything about it. Federal guidelines with the tobacco advertising, they can advertise. They could put the big Marlboro man out in front of their establishment right next to the school. They can't touch out. And that was one thing that I asked for. I said, why can't we target the advertiser? Couldn't touch it. Can't touch it.
Well, that was both of you. Some local area?
I mean, sign.
You had to say it has to apply.
You have a local sign law that says you can't have a lighted sign or this or that.
So that's not going to happen.
But that's really would be more effective, because you can't buy cigarettes unless you're 21 years old.
18.
18? Okay.
And 18.
Or beer. 21.
Right.
Okay. The one will kill you quicker. I don't know.
Right. Well, I
don't know how many beers you're drinking if you get behind the wheel of a car or try to do something.
My thing is, I would rather charge, this license charge a fee for them to sell cigarettes and give a cut to place people at the Cumberland County for a certificate to do business, or that for, you know, other types of businesses, like a landscaping business or any type of business.
Well, they have to have a state license, tobacco and alcohol license, to sell cigarettes.
Yeah.
So all these establishments are regulated by the state. So this was another layer aimed at passing fees. Over time, who knows, 20, 30, 40 years from now, businesses will close and they won't be able to open up an establishment that sells cigarettes. I think it's going to be a long time.
I was really curious to know how many, if they've done a study, and this was one of the questions that I had raised while everybody was talking about this, is how many children are actually influenced by advertising versus being influenced by those close to them, their parents who smoke, the access to cigarettes from their parents who smoke and their peers who smoke and peers who are who have access to their parents' cigarettes, so on and so forth. Yeah, I never fought the idea that
Joe Camel,
really drawing that many kids to a store owner, but
they removed the commercials.
One thing that we do fund, I think it's about $150 a year in order to we hire a kid who looks like
entrapment.
They are underage. They go around with I think someone from the Weights and Measures.
I think in the past 2 or 3 years there was only one incident where somebody had sold them cigarettes.
Better training by management, I think. You're supposed to. I'm not a big fan of entrapment law enforcement like that, but
Well, just in general, I mean, it's not proof of a previous, you know, violation of the law. You're basically creating a crime to try and prove a past pattern of behavior.
It's not necessarily entrapment if they sell.
Yeah, but I mean, you're creating the actual crime, though.
Because the crime's being committed by
yeah, but it's not to say, like, so if they didn't, if they didn't initiate the interaction in the transaction, whatever it might be, you know, whether it's alcohol at a bar, or whether it's, you know, that's like prostitution, or even down south they do with like illegal drug deals. Who's to say that, you know, that they're, it's not proving, in theory it's saying that this person is involved in that behavior, but...
They're doing it to you, they're doing it to me.
All right. He makes the same argument with...
Ear sales.
With radar guns.
Alcohol sales.
You know, radar guns is just a measurement, though. They're not like the police. It's not.
They're assessing the
yeah, what I'm saying, like when you're actually creating the criminal situation. No, but I'm saying when you're sitting there with a radar gun, you're just measuring somebody that is speeding.
Is that essentially what you're doing with the person?
No. Because they're actually from scratch. They're facilitating an episode that's against the law.
I don't know.
I had a friend who's barred with
their friend. It's a conversation for law enforcement.
Such a wrong
committee. I don't want to go off and share it. I guess it's subject related, but anything else? Does anybody know anything else?
Oh, yes, I do. I had a Narcan training last month, and I brought in my Narcan kit.
Well,
if anybody wants to take a look at it,
I got mine in the car.
It comes with two naloxone doses, and you've got little rubber gloves, you've got a little pamphlet how to use it. You actually have a prescription. So when your naloxone is either expired or you've used it, you can get more.
What's the expiration on one of those?
3/18. Don't put it in your glove compartment and leave it there. That's what the doctor says.
Is it heat?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I keep it in. I have like a bag that I
throw
there.
I figure I
take
it 12.
Just
in case, like I have
advice with
somewhere.
Yeah. Yep. And I have 61 people who come to the
office. That was good.
Through the Route 212 Coalition, we did two in Woodstock.
And we had a rain day one for people that couldn't make it, and we still had like over 30. Wow, yeah, Mary Warrell put one on, and celebrities, and we had, I think we had about 40 that showed up, myself and legislator Fabiano, and in addition to legislator Warrell, three of us got certified, and I got one more piece of new business. Last year in the UCAN report, one of the recommendations were to get more state regulations on sober housing.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed at the last meeting, you know, the fact that there aren't any guidelines for private sober housing that don't take OASIS money. And I've been looking on the OASIS website for their guidelines, and they've got different They've got different guidelines for housing, you know, traditional housing, 30 days to 24 months, residential programs. So Tom Cajun wrote me a email, and basically, I don't know, can we make a copy of this? You know, I'll forward the email to the committee. But this was another resolution that I'm going to try to prepare for NYSAC, because I do believe that even the sober housing that is under the OASIS regulations, and I'm not going to name one, but one in your district, I had a woman come to me after the Narcan training, because Dr. Harvey not only teaches you how to use Narcan, but tells you the whole history of opiate use in this country, and that we're the biggest producers of opiate prescriptions and medications in the world, and the largest consumers of it. Anyway, she came to me and said to me that, you know, she had a daughter struggling with addiction, and she was at this house, and she said that the drugs were readily available in the house, and that she could not get sober because there was just too much activity in there. I know for a fact that these residential facilities allow people to come and go. You can accept visitors. So there's just a lot of, you know, it's not like a jail. It's not like you could smuggle anything and you just walk in there with it. And it's not helping people who want to help themselves. And I think one of the things I'd like to see, first of all, if you're going to take taxpayer money to run your residential facility, that you should have spot checks. I know you don't like that. Spot checks, you know, unannounced spot checks. I'm saying to make sure, you know, that you're in compliance and with, you know, compliance with everything, and that there were no drugs on the, you know, on in the.
That's different than shot. I mean,
okay,
right.
That's totally different. And I'm looking for ideas on this. Now, I don't know of any private safe houses. I only know of the ones that are run by Rehabilitation Support Services, which the one in your district is.
I totally agree with Carl. We're fortunate. You came to have Liz Berardi, who's really an expert in this issue. And I talked to her and I looked into it and we had talked about it. I know, so for example, Suffolk County tried to take this issue up and pass a county-wide policy for both private providers. And the state came in and mixed it pretty much, saying they couldn't do it because we have such strict regulations in terms of oversight and when it comes to healthcare in New York State. I mean, it's the same issue we faced with trying to get the cap raised for our methadone clinic at Benedictine, Kingston Hospital.
Yeah.
So Suffolk County's whole plan got squashed by the state, and so they've introduced legislation statewide, but it hasn't gone anywhere. My guess is that the private sober living facility has a strong lobbying effort as well because they don't want. But if you look at some of the stuff Ms. Berardi has, I'm sure she'd be happy to send it to the whole committee. It's really a fascinating issue. I mean, we regulate, you know, places, you know, we talk, which is an important issue, we talk about breeding law in Ulster County. Where we're trying to regulate and make sure there's inspections and for animal breeding. But we're not even allowed as a county to set those same basic standards for sober living facilities within our county. I mean, there's important issues, but they're very different. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, when you put it side by side in context, so if the state's not going to let us do it, they need to do it. Or let us do it and have our own policy within the county.
I think a lot of the issue has to do with laws of privacy and as they relate to HIPAA. So, you know, HIPAA is a federal healthcare records management keeping law, among other things, and privacy. A few individual patients' healthcare records comes under that. And I know actually the rehabilitation facility that Carl brings up that's in my district, there was a list on my voter list of somebody that was registered with the Working Families Party, and when it comes time for campaigning season every 2 years, they're not an easy group of people to get signatures from. And so some fellow elected officials in my Sawgreaves area and on town level were looking to get some signatures, people that get endorsed by the Working Families Party, and they had mentioned that those particular individual, and when I had stopped by the rehab facility a couple times, and I was told by the professional counselors, they said, by law, we can't confirm or deny whether this person lives here or is a resident here, but there's a lot of times where you see people, it's in a residential development where you see people going for walks, you go like at night together during the day, they'll take a walk up to, you know, some of the local stores or whatnot in the plaza that's not far away, or they'll be outside playing a basketball game. So I thought, well, gee, you know, if I happen to come up and they're outside or they're walking down the street, if I say, you know, are you so-and-so,
you know, to get the signature, but, you know, at least voting lists are some of the information on people could be old. The guy could have been a resident there a year and a half before or something. But I think a lot of it with the, you know, with trying to set some kind of policy on a county level, that's an extra layer above state regulations, then a lot of it, you know, some of this coming into play probably has to do with, like, HIPAA and things of that nature where, you know, you can't violate laws of privacy, so...
I don't see how... We're talking about regulation of how they operate.
Well, I'm saying, like, if you...
We're not asking for, you know, like, actual...
If you brought up the idea of...
How are they screening people that come into the facility? How are they screening the patients when they're in and out? What kind of guidance, what kind of oversight is there? What kind of, you know, staffing situations are there, you know, to make sure there is enough security and stuff like that? No, I don't see how any of that jeopardizes...
Well, I think if they're talking about, like, if they were going to like search somebody's living quarters to see if they had drugs on them, that might be something that is like is in a different area.
You know, like if people are on Social Security disability or Medicaid or Medicare, they don't have that right to privacy. They're not paying for this themselves.
And this facility is...
Yeah, I'm saying they still have a right to privacy themselves, though. I mean, like...
Well, I'm not saying people go in there and search. You just have dog sniffing, sniffing dogs, whatever you call them, to find drugs.
But if you're in a fine line between records and beyond, I'm not saying that all private facilities...
You're in a hospital, and your friend brings you cocaine. The hospital has every right to search your private, if they think that you're holding illegal drugs. Why can't the police or law enforcement do the same thing? It would have to be a law enforcement agency that went into these homes to do the search. I'm not saying toss beds or this or that.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, I'm just saying there might be some of the, where you're looking at the layers of regulation through these laws, and some of it has to do with, like, the healthcare laws, you know, where you have a right to privacy, where, you know, they just... can't come in with drug sniffing dogs into a facility because...
Well, if the potential is there that you're committing a crime, I don't think that...
So you come to nursing homes.
Yeah, but usually at a request, though, like there's a call meeting.
Right.
But it's probably at the discretion, obviously it's at the discretion of the administrator. They feel that there's a drug transaction.
You have trained staff that perform.
Well, yeah.
If you're talking about addiction,
you're talking about these homes, these sober homes are for people with addictions. They're not people who have brain injuries or broken leg, you know, or just got out of triple bypass surgery.
Right.
You know, they're not the general population. They are a narrow, specific demographic. And that facility is there solely to help them recover. And if the facility isn't doing anything to help them recover by allowing people to come in or their residents to go out and bring whatever the heck they want in there, then they shouldn't get...
Funding.
They should not get funding.
Well, I understand your point.
Do these facilities collect...
I'm saying there's money
fine
legally
to allow you to implement
something.
I don't... Because look at, for example, the place in Northern Westchester. It's run by... it's run by Jesuit priests. It's a men's only facility. It's very well known in Northern Westchester. You're not allowed to... They have very strict rules on that in that facility, and they receive public funding. You're not allowed to curse. Every person gets you pretty much have certain tasks you have to earn your stay there. There's rights to impose, and if you don't follow that, you're out. You don't get. And the problem is too, because they're so well known, people want to follow these rules because they want to stay there. It's tough to get. You know, it's a very good facility, but the problem is with these private facilities, is they're charging these families ungodly amounts of money, and they're able to cut any corner they want. Not saying that every facility does that, but there's more than Ms. Barati concerned, and unfortunately she had a personal experience that she speaks openly about with one of these facilities, where you're spending tons and tons of money,
and they have the ability to not be held up to the standard of care, which I think most of us would want for a family member, because there's zero oversight.
It's not a safe house. It's a safe house.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's sober housing.
It's over.
Yet they're raking in thousands and thousands of dollars from families.
The same argument has been made for private nursing homes.
Yeah. Well, look, there was a fat farm in Stattsburg, okay? And they would not allow anybody, you couldn't smuggle in a sandwich or anything. They tossed your room over. I forget the name of the place, but they would advertise controlled fasting. And the thrust of their business was to get people to lose weight. The thrust of the business of a sober house is to get people on the road to recovery. If they can't do that if it's not monitored completely, where people, you know, can bring drugs into the facility or do drugs outside the facility and then come back in. I don't know the answer. All I know is there's got to be some effort to check.
All I'm saying is that to do it on a level like what you're saying, it's you know, like the fine line between somebody's personal privacy and having 24/7 monitoring of them, and the costs associated with that would make the cost of these clinics even skyrocket higher than they are. I mean, I
think these residents are mandated to go to these facilities.
I mean, I take Legislator Hefner's point is spot on, you know, because these clinics are it's exorbitant what they're charging health insurance companies and people that pay private out of pocket. So obviously there should be some sort of solution to it, you know.
It's an organic one.
Well, I can say one thing for certain is that I appreciate you bringing that up.
Speculation is well noted by the chairman.
Absolutely. So, anything else?
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right.
Yeah, I'll put them in the...
Yeah, any suggestions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's
more freezing.
No, it's like right on the border. I think it's interesting northern and... Northern Westchester. I'm not positive. It's run by a Jesuit priest, and you have to be they don't reject anyone, but you have to be without residence.
If it was Thursday, the same night as public works,
my cousin myself have been kicked out because I don't have a counselor to get left off.